with Yaakov and the bracha. It's like all this deception. Yaakov deceives his father, and Rivka's in on the deception, and then the whole next week's parasha Vayetze was all about how Yaakov keeps on getting deceived. Laban is tricking him, first regarding Rachel Naya, then regarding business, and then Yaakov tricks Laban back. It says Vayignov Yaakov eslev Laban harami. There's all this kinds of deception, and then we see that it passes on to the next generation, because Vayanu Vnei Yaakov Eschem Veschamor B'mirma. It's the same word that's used to describe Yaakov, Ba'achicha B'mirma Vayikach B'erchosecha. It's just like this tremendous amount of deception which is going on, and it seems to get worse and worse. And we said the worst deceptions, you know, it makes Yaakov and Esav and the Bracha looks like child's play when they torture Yaakov with the Ksonas Pasim. And they say, HaKerna, Ksonas bin Chahim Lo. So they, you know, setting up their father for 22 years of suffering, all based on this deception. So we said last time we met is to try to wrap up Sefer Bereishis and recognize that the Sefer can only really end when these deceptions are rectified. So of course Yaakov has to, you know, come to know that Yosef is still alive, and Yosef has to reveal himself to his brothers. All of that is the obvious part. But I wanted to finish off on a more subtle point, which is that Sefer Bereishis ends with an act of what the Torah describes of chesed ve'emes. Now, the way that we normally understand that, I guess the traditional interpretation, but it's really not the actual pshat of the words, of chesed ve'emes, that Yaakov is going to be buried back in the land of Canaan, is the idea that some chesed we expect to be repaid for, and there's other chesed that we can have no reasonable expectation the person's going to be able to repay us because the person is no longer here. So a chesed which is involved with a kavura, with a burial, is considered a chesed shel emes. But the actual words of the pasuk, I just wanted to interpret a little bit differently in light of our motif here in Sefer Bereishis. So when Yaakov says to Yosef, V'asisei madi chesed ve'emes, al natik b'reini Mitzrayim, please don't bury me in Egypt. So I'd like to interpret it more literally, that it is, of course, a chesed, that Yaakov understood that it would require effort on Yosef's part, and we know it wasn't easy for Yosef to get permission to leave Egypt, and that's a whole to-do involving Paro, and Rashi says he even had to issue a veiled threat against Paro, that he was going to expose Paro. Paro wasn't so happy with the plan altogether. So it is a chesed on one level, but ms literally means to keep your word, to be truthful. In other words, after Yaakov's gone, he can't possibly make sure that this will happen. He can't ensure it himself. It's something that Yosef will have to do out of a sense of loyalty, out of a sense of truthfulness, and ne'emanut, okay, the sense of faithfulness to the word that he gave his father. So the idea that Sefer Bereishis ends with an act of chesed ve'emes, an act of truthfulness, is extremely important once you realize that the entire theme of the Sefer is one deception perpetrated against after another, and again with that original deception being, we traced it all back to Parshas Toldos, where Yaakov deceives his own father. So then how appropriate it would be then, if our interpretation is correct, that Sefer Bereishis should end where Yaakov has to turn to his son and says, I need you to act faithfully with me. The Sefer can only end when Yaakov personally, who had deceived his own father, triggering this whole pattern of events of deception that ends up with the Jewish people in Egypt, the road back to Canaan has to run through MS, has to run through truthfulness, and Yaakov has to turn to his own son and said, please act faithfully with me, act in honesty with me, you can't break your promise to me, I don't want to be stuck here in Egypt. So the road back to Canaan runs through MS. So that's sort of bringing Sefer Bereishis to a close. But I wanted to go even further and to make a more comprehensive argument that Yosef comes to represent the paradigm of MS, and in that way really serves as the archetype of ending Sefer Bereishis and reversing all of the previous deceptions. So let me just give you four quick examples, and I'm helped along here by the Ramban, who points all of these things out in terms of Yosef's personal cultivation of the Midah of Emes, of the idea of truthfulness, which is something that we normally associate with his father Yaakov. We say Chesed Avram, Emes LeYaakov, but the truth of the matter is that Yosef, maybe even more so than Yaakov, stands out in this way. So I just wanted to trace it through his life, and of course with Sefer Bereishis ending with Yosef, then to say the book is coming to an end with the story of Yosef's faithfulness. So I think it begins in Yosef's life. I'm going to avail myself of an interpretation of the Ramban with Yosef's time in the house of Potiphar. So Yosef arrives in Potiphar's house as a slave, and the Torah says he had this meteoric rise. First he was working out in the field. Those who know a little bit of the history of American slavery know that there was a big divide between the slaves who worked in the fields and the slaves who worked in the house. So Yosef starts out working in the fields, and then Potiphar sees that he's very competent, he's very successful, and Potiphar appoints him in the house, and then he becomes his personal chief of staff. It says, Vayisharis Oso, that he then got another promotion, and eventually Potiphar basically starts playing golf all the time. He absents himself, and he lets Yosef run the show, and it says in the Torah, Velo Yada Ito Me'uma, that he literally didn't know anything about what Yosef was doing. He trusted him implicitly, Ki'im Halecha Masher Hu Ochel. That's a very, very difficult to understand expression. Rashi says it's a euphemism that Potiphar said, there's only one rule here, you can't take my wife. Other Meforshim go for other interpretations. But the Ramban says, Kim Halecha Masher Hu Ochel means something else entirely. What it means is that Yosef, who managed the finances of the household, had such a degree of integrity that he would only eat bread. Now, he could have taken whatever he wanted. You know, the refrigerator was stocked, and now we're having a graft investigation in Israel. You know, there's champagne and cigars and gourmet meals. So the Ramban says that Yosef would eat bread. He felt it wouldn't be appropriate for him to take from the resources of Potiphar, that would not reflect honesty. So that is source number one. So you see the beginning of the cultivation of this idea of honesty. The Ramban continues with this theme that when Yosef is of course, the viceroy of Egypt, and he's controlling not just one man's estate, but the entire Egyptian economy. So the Ramban expands on this point, and based on a pasuk in Parshas Vayigash, where it says that Paro commands Yosef to send wagons to bring Yaakov from Canaan to Mitzrayim. The pasuk says, "V'atatzu ve'sazosasu." You have been commanded. I'm commanding you to do this. So the Ramban asks a simple question: why did Paro need to command Yosef to send the wagons? Well, Yosef, at this point, was very motivated to bring his father. So the Ramban says it's because Yosef would never have availed himself of those kinds of resources. Those were expensive. He would have considered it dishonest. And for that very reason, the Ramban says, that's why Yosef didn't want to send massive stocks of food up to Canaan and say to father, think about this, Yaakov could have stayed in Canaan. Yosef will say, it's approximately, the Ramban says, a six-day journey. It could be done in 6 days. You know, the brothers constantly go back and forth between Egypt and Canaan. So ask yourself a simple question. Why did Yaakov have to come down at all? He could have stayed in Canaan. So Ramban says the reason that was not an acceptable solution from Yosef's point of view is how would it have looked? You know, the Egyptians are hungry, and he's sending bread stores out of Egypt to support his father. It would have been inappropriate. And he was waiting for a tzivoy from Paro. And if you read the psukim very carefully, every time it says that Yosef was supporting his family, it says that Paro gave an explicit command. The Ramban is very, very careful in terms of reading the psukim. So even when it came to his own family, Yosef was particularly concerned that there should be, you know, any nepotism whatsoever, any act of dishonesty. Yet another example. The Ramban wonders why we have to know how exactly Yosef managed the famine. The Torah says that first the Egyptians came with their money, then they came with their animals, and then they were willing to sell themselves into slavery. So the Ramban asks the question. He says, you know, the Torah could say Yosef successfully managed the famine. Why do we go into detail? So the Ramban says it's for two reasons. First of all, to show you how intelligent Yosef was, he uses three terms, bechachma, betvuno, vedas, the same terms that appear in the construction of the Mishkan, which is a shir in its own right. The second reason that he cites is to teach us that Yosef was an ish emunim. He was absolutely honest, and he didn't keep any side bank accounts or offshore funds, you know, as anybody else would have done. He controlled all the money in the world, basically, at that time. And he didn't take a penny. If every last penny was accounted for, it all went to Paro. And it was to teach us this lesson that Yosef was an ish emunim. So if all of this is true, I just wanted to bring Sefer Bereishis to a close. It's a story of deception after deception after deception. So it comes to a conclusion with Yosef as an ish emunim, practicing the midah of MS, and in that way, bringing a kind of a tikkun, a repair to many of the deceptions that occur in the Sefer, and particularly deceptions that involve Yosef himself with the Ksonis Pasim. But I just wanted to conclude with a bit of a subtlety. You know, very often you have people who are sticklers for truth, they can lack compassion. And you've heard the expression, somebody is brutally honest. And just honest, they're brutally honest. So there's a machlokas in the Gemara Masachos Ksuvos and Daf Yud Zayin. What do you do at a wedding? How do you make a bride feel special? So Beis Hillel says, and this is the practice that we follow, it doesn't matter what she looks like. She may not be the most beautiful bride in the world. She may be the opposite. But the Beis Hillel says, Kala na'a v'chasuda, we do everything to make sure that the marriage gets started on the right foot, and we want to make the husband feel that this is very special. So it doesn't matter who she is. She could be the greatest actress in the world, or somebody who would never be eligible for a role in Hollywood, even as an extra. And yet Beis Hillel says, Kala na'a v'chasuda. Beis Shammai says, we don't do that. Kala kamo shehi, whatever she is, she is. We don't exaggerate. That's brutal honesty. That's Beis Shammai. We don't accept that point of view. But to Yosef, he cultivated this midah of emes, but what's really important to recognize is that it didn't come at the expense of rachmanos. Let me just conclude by giving you two examples, and again, with indebtedness towards the Ramban here, because the Ramban is really the one who points this out. I'm just developing in my own way. The Ramban notes that if you read the psukim carefully, the Egyptians, when they run out of money and they run out of animals, come to Yosef and basically say, so enslave us. There's nothing left, so enslave us. But Yosef knew what it meant to be an Eved, and he wasn't prepared to do that to other people. So Yosef says, Hin kadnisias ad maschem lefaro. I'm going to buy the land, okay? I'm going to buy the land, and you will work the land. But the Ramban makes a point of saying that Yosef did not actually buy the people as slaves. And as a matter of fact, even though the standard sharecropping rate at that time, right, when a person doesn't own his own land, he's called the sharecropper. The standard rate is that the sharecropper would keep 20% and 80% would go to the landlord. And Yosef flips the ratio. Yosef says that the Egyptians can keep 80% and only 20% tax rate to power. There are a lot of Americans who would settle for a tax rate of, maximum tax rate of 20%. And it was all done, the Ramban says, out of Rachmanas, because Yosef had compassion. He himself had been an Eved, and Yosef did not want to enslave other people, which is why the third to last pasuk of Sefer Bereishis, the Egyptians say, or Parshas Vayigash says, Vayomru hechi yisanu. They say, you've given us life. Nimtzachein b'nei Adoni. Would that we could find favor in your eyes, Vayunu avadim lefaro. If this is what it means, we'll gladly be slaves to Paro if we could work for somebody like you under your terms. So again, a person of great honesty, but a person who's not brutally honest, a person who has a degree of rachmanis. And now, the coup de grace at the final stage. You know, again, Yosef, who in his own dealings was always careful to be 100% honest. So the question, that just to end off our analysis of Sefer Bereishis, is did Yaakov ever find out the truth? Did he ever really know that the brothers were deeply involved, either directly selling Yosef or setting up Yosef to be sold? So the Ramban's answer to that question is no. That Yosef never, ever told the truth to Yaakov. When the brothers come back, they say, Od Yosef chai v'chiyu moshel b'chol eretz Mitzrayim, he's in charge of all of Egypt. They don't incriminate themselves. They don't say how he ended up there. And they never take responsibility. And the Ramban says, he says, I'm speculating because the Torah doesn't say this directly. But it seems to him that Yosef, and he brings some evidence to support, he says, it seems to him that Yosef never told Yaakov the truth about what happened. He just always went along with the idea that somehow he got lost around the Shechem area. So this is really remarkable. Somebody who's so insistent on honesty in all of his dealings at his own expense, when honesty would serve his purposes, right, and you know he could expose other people, all of a sudden he's willing to be mevater, he's willing to put honesty aside. So that's the greatness of Yosef. On the one hand, incredible honesty in all of his dealings, at the same time, not brutal honesty. So he shows rachmanas to the Egyptians, number one, and number two, because he never feels the need to tell his father exactly what happened. The important thing is that he's alive, the family is reunited, why should he put his father through additional suffering? And so he doesn't lie to his father, but he doesn't clarify exactly what happened. You know, they asked Mark Twain one time. Mark Twain wrote an incredible travelogue called Innocents Abroad, and they asked Mark Twain, who himself was a big Philo Semite, he had a lot of good things to say about Jews and a lot of good things to say about Israel. They asked him what he thought the source of anti-Semitism was. So Mark Twain says that he thinks that it relates back to Parshas Vayigash because Yosef enslaved the Egyptians, okay? That's the way Twain read the story, but we know that's not how the Ramban read the story. So if they really had learned, if Twain had learned the Ramban, or you know, I guess whoever else had learned the Ramban, they would realize that Yosef did not enslave the Egyptian people, but he acted with great compassion towards them. And that's why, again, Twain seemed to have missed this pasuk. That's why the Egyptians say, Hecha yisanu, you've given us life. We were literally on the verge of death. You've given us life by not enslaving us and by making sure that we could hold on to 80% of the produce, which was, again, the inverse of the rate that would be accepted at that time. And then the Torah says, Vayasem osa Yosef lechok, Alad Mas Mitzrayim the Pharaoh, Yosef put that into law so that it would continue even after he was gone, to make sure that even after he died, that people, especially in the lower socioeconomic spheres, would be treated very well and would not have to give an 80% rate, would give at maximum a 20% rate. So Esahu Chacham, Haroes Hanolad, he was looking to the future and making sure that society would be equitable and it would be a sustainable form of social justice. So Yosef is very much a hero in that way. So again, just to conclude where we started, Sefer Bereishis, as we learned over the course of the semester, there are many, many, many deceptions. It begins primarily with Yaakov's deception of his own father. And the book ends when Yaakov has to turn to his son. Now he's in the position of the aging, elderly, dying father. And he turns to his son and he says, I need you to do chesed, but not only chesed, but emes. I need you to act in great faith to the words. I'm not going to be here, I can't check on you, but you have to act nobly and honestly. And I would say there would be no better person in the world to demonstrate that midah of honesty than Yosef, as we saw, who in all of his dealings was really the paragon of what MS is all about. Okay, so thank you very much for joining for Sefer Bereishis. I guess next semester we're going to pick it up. We'll talk a little bit about Sefer Shmos, and that'll be our theme, is what is the book of Shmos really about? A little preview.
Very nice.
Family to a nation. Okay. Okay.
He wouldn't enslave them, but then eventually they enslave